I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days. And what I feel.
Patricia T. O'Connor is here, author of a number of books on the English language, Woe Is I, and then the kids' version of that, Woe Is I Junior. You Send Me, Words Fail Me, Origins of the Specious. Have I left any out, Pat?
Not that I can think of.
But then there's also all of the things you write on your blog,
yes,
at grammophobia.com.
Mostly in response to WNYC listeners.
Have they become oppressive?
Oh, never. Never. It does take me a while to get to some of them, so I thank them for their patience.
Now, you want to talk about the word discombobulate.
Yes.
Discombobulate, of course, means that dis, mm-hmm, would suggest that there is a word
that
combobulate.
That would suggest that it's a negative of some word, but that would be incorrect.
There is no combobulating.
No. Actually, the reason I've been thinking about all this is because of a couple of emails from listeners, one of which prompted the question why the word discombobulate has no positive opposite. Why is there no word combobulate? You look in the dictionary for it in vain. The answer is that discombobulate is a joke word. It was formed in the 19th century U.S., as an alteration, probably, of words like discompose or discomfit. That's why there's no combobulate. It's just a joke word.
But there's no word comfit either, C-O-M-F-I-T.
Well, there probably was at one time, because generally when you see words with what looks like a negative prefix in there, and they don't seem to have an unaffixed root, like comfit, although I think there is a comfit, an old one. Often it's because that word has become archaic.
Mm-hmm.
Or it may be that it never existed. But in the case of discombobulate, it didn't exist. There was no combobulate. But apparently, the lack of this word has created a need, because there actually is a word out there, though you won't find it in standard dictionaries, and that word is recombobulate, which means to get over your discombobulation, put yourself back together again and whatnot, pull yourself together. Now, unbeknownst to me, this word recombobulate has been around for about 40 years. Who knew? You know, I'm reading about words all the time. I never saw this.
Because I've never heard it used.
Yeah, you don't hear it used. I did a search and came up with some appearances in two books published in 1970. One was a mystery novel by Amanda Cross, also known as Carolyn Heilbrunn, and the other was in a book about skiing. And I'll tell you how it was used. The ski guide said, it was talking about when you get in trouble on a slope. It said, put your weight on your outside ski and ride that until you're recombobulated and back on course. Seems to make perfect sense, doesn't it? But anyway, since two such different authors used the word in books published in 1970, and those had to be written at the end of the 60s, I can only assume that it came up sometime in the 60s, because that's the earliest reference to it I could find. But apparently recombobulate, as they say, fills a much-needed gap.
Well, the Times has been publishing words in its magazine that it would like.
Oh, right.
They fill needs, vacuums. Uh-huh. But none of them have really struck me.
Well, no, they don't seem like
you think they just meant to be
power.
Jokes?
Yeah, I think
they're meant to be discombobulate jokes. Is not exactly the easiest word in the
right.
world to say.
Right, and it has entered the lexicon. It was a joke word, but it's entered the lexicon. And it seems to me, I don't know why recombobulate isn't more known, because it has a lot going for it. But it was apparently in the news a couple of years ago when the Milwaukee airport, the security people there set aside what they designated as the recombobulation area. They put a big sign, recombobulation area, just beyond the place where you go through the security screening apparatus. So that would give people
a
chance
to put your shoes on.
Right, sit down, put your shoes back on, put your belt on if necessary, reorganize your carry-on bag, straighten your clothes. and I'll get over the horror. Get over the horror of the screening process. And it was called the recombobulation area. And I thought that was it was cute that the security people had a sense of humor about that. But by the way, you mentioned words that have no positive root to them. And discombobulation is only one of many that have no positive counterpart. The roots don't exist or they've fallen out of use or something. Disgruntled is one such word. Today we use gruntled as a joke, but there's no such word gruntled today, but there used to be. Back in the 1400s, to gruntle was a verb meaning to grunt like a pig. And in the 1500s, it meant to grumble or complain. And finally, in the 1600s, people added the prefix dis to it, not as a negative, but as an intensifier. And it gave us the modern words disgruntle and disgruntled. So when people complain about the language changing, they should remember that we wouldn't have words like disgruntle if it didn't.
In the far past. On the other hand, we have the word dis now.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
And that's a new word.
Uh-huh.
But we all know what that means because of all these other dis words.
Exactly. And actually, there is a word, verb, disrespect. It's many, many hundreds of years old, goes back to early biblical translations, and it's been around for quite some time. So I think of dis as just a short form of to disrespect. And that was once a common verb, not anymore, but it once was.
Now, there are, you said you went back to find recombobulate.
Right.
Ben Zimmer was on our show recently with the latest on the word jazz.
And right.
Throughout history, I've read that jazz had its origins in the brothels of New Orleans, and that's why some people objected to it being applied to America's great original music. And he has discovered that it was originally used by a pitcher in the West Coast, I think San Francisco, to describe a trick pitch that he had. So that somehow got picked up by the musicians as an odd thing.
Right.
Now, I don't know. Maybe somebody will go back and find even further that pitcher was using a word that somebody else had used to mean something totally different again.
Right. It could
be. But this is a constant area of discovery, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's possible now because of the digitization of all these old newspapers and old archives of letters and whatnot, but especially old newspapers. Where you can actually do searches for things like this.
So we have a listener who has another word that may be in the same spirit. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Peter from Nyack.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. I would first just like to say that you're my favorite guest of Leonard's.
Generally. Oh, shucks.
Now, don't tell the other guests. Some of them might be very hurt.
Oh, I hardly ever call. I would like to ask, and it just sort of sounds similar to some of the words you're using. Does the phrase or the term nincompoop come from the Latin non compos mentis?
No, it actually doesn't.
Ah,
sure. I did a blog item about that once, researching that, and I can't think of the – I know that – I think it was Samuel Johnson in his Dictionary of 1755,
okay.
if I'm not mistaken – I believe he defined it that way as coming from non compos mentis, but he was making an assumption there, and it actually was around earlier, and it was I can't remember. I think it came from the word innocent. I think it was an alteration of maybe Latin words. It has the word innocent in there, meaning unknowing.
Well, it just seems to fit together nicely the way it sounds.
I know, it does.
Okay.
There's another word like that, sincere. There's an urban legend out there that it comes from the Latin for without wax. This is another long story.
Without a seal on it?
Meaning honey made without beeswax in it. It's pure, so it's sincere, without wax. Well, that's another myth. That's not the source of the word sincere.
Okay, and before I go, I would like to also say, I think it was your last visit, talking about words that you just love the sound of.
Uh-huh.
Haberdashery.
Oh, that's a wonderful word. Yeah, that's very good.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks.
Here's John from Paramus with another word of this sort. Hi, John.
How are you doing? She's my second favorite guest of yours. My first one was Jerry Lewis, but that's another story.
Yeah, I always remember that visit with certain fondness,
That's an inside low-paid joke. Yeah. But you talk about disgruntled. What about disgusted? Is there a word gusted or gust?
I think that has something. It probably came from something to do with taste.
Well, gustatory.
Gustatory. Yeah, and so we don't say someone's gusted anymore, but we say disgusted. And the same with words like ruthless. You say, well, if you're not ruthless, does that mean you've got Ruth? Well, yes. There used to be a word, Ruth. It meant regret. It's not used much anymore. So that's how that came along. Same with words like.
Thank you very much. I enjoy your show.
Yeah, and we thank you for calling.
Uncouth, unkempt, disheveled.
Well, here we have another one. John from Forest Hills. Hi.
Hello there. Love this program and love this segment always. My question is, I've met, unfortunately, too many uncouth people. How do I know if I met somebody who's couth?
You can only feel that in your soul, I think.
My soulmate?
Yes.
But couth, does that come from...
This is another one that I've researched this, and now I can't remember what I came up with. This happens more and more to me all the time.
Oh, don't tell me.
I know. I'm going to my 40th college reunion later this spring, and I think that has something to do with it. I'm losing my long-term memory.
We'll figure it out.
I thought it was short-term that you lose.
You lose short-term, you lose long-term.
Well, whatever.
We have Andy from... Where are you from? Poughkeepsie?
Yes, Poughkeepsie.
With another word like that?
Well, it actually works perfectly with the last one, nonchalance. Can you be...
Oh, nonchalance.
I felt chalance before, but I didn't know if that was actually a word.
Well, it used to be a word, but no more. Chalant.
Oh, so it did exist.
Actually, it has a meaning in French. And I think it has to do... No, you probably know more
French than I
do. Chalant. I can't help you out here, Pat, but it sounds French. Sophisticated or knowing, something like that.
Well, the whole word, nonchalant, sounds like it should be French.
Really. Yes, oui. I'm good at oui.
Oui.
Which, of course, looks to some people like the word oi.
Oi.
But that's all. Andy, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. With me is Patricia T. O'Connor. We're talking about the English language. And we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And we have a number of people who have written in with questions. For example, Joe from Bridgewater asks, what's the etymology of your welcome? In French or Spanish, variations of it's nothing are used, de nada.
Mm-hmm.
Is the equivalent of your welcome used in other languages?
Oh, yeah. Every language has its equivalent of your welcome, meaning not welcoming someone, but as a response to thank you. Mm-hmm. And it's often something like, it's nothing, de nada.
This person is saying that is different.
It is.
De nada.
We say sometimes don't mention it.
Uh-huh. No prob.
Think nothing of it. Or no problem. Yes. No problema. We're the only ones who have a construction like you're welcome, which goes back very, very far. And it has a more or less literal meaning. Well and come are
what
part
about
of
in
the,
German?
That
wouldn't it come from German?
Willkommen, yes, yeah. Probably yes.
But do Germans say you're welcome, or do they say what do they say after you say Gesundheit?
Willkommen? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they say you just.
We have so many smart listeners. We're going to get calls.
Yeah.
Peter in Brooklyn says, "Can Pat address the wide misuse of to curate to mean something like edit, aggregate, and arrange. I see it in curator everywhere. Curator is the word, isn't it? And I assume it was being used properly, but when I looked it up, I was shocked to learn that it simply means to act as a curator, and that a curator is simply one who has the care or a superintendence of something, especially one in charge of a zoo, museum, and other exhibition space.
Right. The word curate for an underling, a religious underling sort of minister, comes from the same source. But, I got a an email once from someone who asked about curated because there had been a story in the Times about something like how to curate your garage sale. Which it goes a little bit far.
And I've had listeners complain when I've said so-and-so curated the show. Mm-hmm. They want me to say so-and-so was the curator of the show.
Oh, no. To curate is a perfectly legitimate verb. Not
for many of my listeners.
Well, maybe the listeners should get the new fifth edition of American Heritage.
Sean from Manhattan writes, I've jokingly used the word whelmed to imply
neutrality.
Oh, that's
neutrality. Another one. Yeah,
The show was okay. I was just whelmed.
Yes.
Rather than overwhelmed or underwhelmed.
Yeah.
And to
whelmed
me, the word implies a positive and a negative, but no neutral. Are there other words like this?
Overwhelm implies a positive and a... Oh, you can be overwhelmed with joy, or you can be overwhelmed with disgust, or you can be overwhelmed with work. In itself, it doesn't really
Well, overwhelmed or underwhelmed.
Or
but
underwhelmed.
You don't have an in-between.
No, semi-whelmed, I guess.
Yeah.
But whelm actually used to be a word. To whelm was to swamp, like as in a ship or something.
So we've just lost that word.
We've kind of lost that, but it's stayed around in overwhelm and... We've adopted underwhelm as sort of a joke word because it couldn't literally be true.
Stephen from Greenpoint writes, the word tantrum seems to have no origin to me. It seems highly likely that it's from the Sanskrit word tantra. Do you have any insight into this?
I don't.
A tantrum is totally different than a tantrum, isn't
it?
Yeah,
I would think so. But it does have a sound to it like an Indian word. Origin unknown.
Also, well, that's always good.
Yeah, it says here, also called regionally hissy fit. I like that. I'll bet that wasn't in the fourth edition.
I don't think so.
Well, so origin unknown. But, now that we have so many advanced research tools, people may be able to uncover older and older origins of things and track things like this down.
Although we shouldn't necessarily assume that this is something that goes back to the Old English or to Latin. It could easily come from from Asia because we've taken so many words.
Oh, yeah. Arabic, Indian, Persian, Chinese. There are many, many language families other than the Latin and the Germanic.
Let's take some more calls. Sal from East Islip. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, love the show. And I'm going to be tactful and say, Pat, you're one of my favorite guests.
Thank you.
It's getting less and less whelming.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting less and less whelmed by these compliments.
There we go. Going back to the word discombobulation.
Yes.
Back in the early 60s, I was like in kindergarten around that age.
Uh-huh.
There used to be a cartoon called Astro Boy.
Hmm. It
played
rings a bell.
In the early mornings, and I would sit there and watch that before going off to school.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he got whacked, ran into some situation, he used the word discombobulation.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first time I ever heard that word.
Yeah. Actually, would you believe that it was first recorded in 1839? And before that, it had another form in 1834, discombobricated, and it just got altered.
And Sal, that's before Astro Boy was even imagined by its creator.
That definitely predates Astro Boy.
That was back in the black and white days.
They didn't even know that there's going to be a team called the Houston Astros at that time.
Right.
Thank you for calling.
Or a Houston.
Oh, thank you for having this great show.
Yeah, they thought in those days it was Houston.
It was Houston in those days.
We go now to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Murray Hill.
I'm going to keep the theme going and say I do love Patricia. I had a question.
Does Stuart listen to this?
He's listening.
Your husband listened to these shows?
Yeah, and I'm going to remind him of this.
I'm not loving that way. But I received an email yesterday, and the last sentence kind of bothered me. I don't know whether it's right or wrong. I'm not smart enough to know, but I wanted to ask your opinion. They were seeking donations, and it said, thank you for your continuous support.
Continuous?
Yes. In my head, I said, maybe continued sounds better, but I don't know, what's right or if there is anything right.
I think continuing would be the more sensible word to use. I won't say they're wrong. But continuous support sounds like you never stop writing those checks. You just make it your life's work to work to support this charity or whatever it is.
Maybe that's what they're hoping you will do.
Yeah, I was going to say I didn't give anything yet, so I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, I think
but I didn't know what it,
they
know.
Probably meant continuing. But if you had never given to them before, I don't know why they would say continuing. Well, they should say thank you for your
possible
support, which we've never seen before, deadbeat.
I get a lot of requests for money from people who say things like, thank you for your support over the years.
And you say, what
support?
This
is the first time I've ever heard of you. I guess that's their way of suggesting that we have some kind of a relationship, and they're immediately establishing a bond.
I think it's their way of not bothering to do their research, market research on you in particular.
Several listeners have left comments saying that in Germany you would say bitte in response to danke. It functions as both please and you're welcome.
Yes, that's right. I actually studied German, and I had forgotten that. See, that's what I mean about my memory. But yes, bitte.
It's a bitter pill to swallow.
Bitte to swallow, yes.
We will take a little break. And we will try
to... It's a bitter pill to swallow.
Yes, that's what I was trying to say. my guest is Patricia T. O'Connor. Our number here, 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We're back with Patricia T. O'Connor, and your calls are 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Let's go to Susan from Brooklyn. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi. First of all, bitte is please in German, but it's either bitte sehr, which is very please, or bitte schön, very pretty please, or in some places, gern geschehen, done with pleasure. And anyway, I have another word that doesn't have a cognate, nonplussed. We don't really say plussed.
Exactly. You're right.
And where does nonplussed come from?
Well, it comes from Latin, the words non and plus, meaning no more. And I always like to remember it because if you're nonplussed, you feel that you can do no more.
Yeah, you have nothing else to say, right?
Correct. You're speechless.
Right. Okay.
Thank you for calling us. And Michael from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? You know, this has been bothering me for years, and I've never been able to get through to tell you about it. Whenever there's an earthquake anywhere in the world, the TV and radio media always refer to it in the same conventional way. In the first sentence, they'll say, there was an earthquake in Indonesia, for instance. And then the second time they refer to it, they'll always say, the Temblor measured 7.2 on the Richter scale. Is there some rule that they have to do this?
Is it Temblor or Trembler?
It's Temblor.
Temblor.
Yeah. And it's a word that's only used by journalists.
Yeah.
No real human being has ever used the word Temblor in a conversation. And I think it's been valuable to journalists for headline purposes. And there's really no use for it in actual text unless you're tired of using the word earthquake.
But isn't that what we all strive to do? I hate to keep on using the same after sentence. It sounds like I'm stuck in a rut.
I know. It's become so predictable to me. It's like I can blink and predict the future as soon as I hear earthquake on the radio. Next word's going to be Temblor. Anyway,
yeah.
Real quick, I have two words also that tie into some of the earlier conversation. This is a word that doesn't exist but ought to.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mixture of trivial and frivolous called frivial.
Oh,
and,
yeah, that's
and a friend
good.
Of mine actually used it for real the other day, and
frivial.
Everybody knew exactly what he meant.
Frivial, yes.
Frivial.
That's good. That's a very good one.
I like it, too.
Yeah.
And this one goes to those negative words that don't have a positive. I could never understand why they invented two different words, flammable and inflammable. And I know you've probably discussed this
we
before.
We have discussed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a long story. Actually,
me.
No, I'll tell you, the original word was inflammable. Flammable was an invention of the fire insurance industry in the early 20th century.
And it makes sense.
It makes sense.
But, you know, there have been comedians. Stephen Wright did mm-hmm. a whole routine based on the words that seem to describe something other than what they are or are inconsistent, like flammable, inflammable, freeway, driveway, things
I
like
know.
That.
I know, parkway. Yeah.
And actually, parkway is always the same thing. It's a road that leads to a park.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I never knew that.
Think about it. Think about all the parkways. And, Eastern Parkway goes to Prospect Park.
Oh.
Et cetera. It's even
everything
in California.
The scales have fallen from my eyes. It's all clear now.
Matt has written in on Facebook and wonders about misnomer. Nomer is not a word in English as far as he knows.
Well, no, but the root is nom, of course, for name. But you're right. We don't say that's a nomer when we mean that's a good word for something. But we do say that's a misnomer if we mean it's not a good word for something.
That's one of the most misused words.
Yes, people say that's a misnomer, and they don't mean actual misnomer. They mean it's not true. So a misnomer should not be used to describe an untruth.
Mike from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I am hyperwhelmed. and a couple of very brief things, and I'll just take your comments. I'll hang up. In English, lots of consonants transform, like V's into F's, shelf into shelves, and wolf into wolves.
Right.
P's often turn into B's.
Yes.
So in the word composure or discomposure, that's actually the archaic root of the joke word discombobulate, where the P turned into a B. Secondly, as for gruntled and plussed and whelmed, there's a wonderful essay about 10 years ago by John Winters called How I Met My Wife.
Yes,
and
it's Jack Winter.
If you Google How I Met My Wife, it's online, and I think everybody here would enjoy it.
Yeah.
And my neologism for today is little things which get in the way, and that word is impedimentia. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling us, Sandra.
Yeah, that essay was in The New Yorker, and it's by Jack Winter.
Sandra from Manhattan is on the air right now. Hi.
Hi. When I was a kid, I learned the word inept, as in socially inept. And then when I used the word ept, which seemed perfectly reasonable
to me.
Well,
it seemed apt, didn't it?
The adults around me all started giggling, assuring me that they were giggling with me, not at me.
Right.
But what's the story about that?
About ept.
Inept.
Inept, yeah. And not there not being the word ept.
there is no actual word apt.
Mm-hmm.
But would that be a version of apt?
It could be. I can't tell you that for sure. I'm not sure about that.
It's one of those other things that just happened.
Now, inept, apt is a word in itself.
Sure. Now that I know, but I just wondered.
I don't know.
I mean, that sort of seems to be the obvious reason.
But a lot of people use apt in a joking way.
Oh, do they?
Yes.
Okay, well, yes. That. Anyway, thanks very much.
Thank you for calling us. A listener wonders about impeccable. There's another one.
Peckable. Yes, that's another one. I mean, there are so many out there. In fact, people are suggesting ones that I hadn't heard of before.
But you don't describe
things as peckable.
No?
No.
Well, actually, I can think of a couple of things that are peckable, but I've had some meals where I found quite peckable.
Yes, yes.
Okay, Nanette from Staten Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi there. This is a really fun show. And I am a big fan of the word preposterous. And I wonder, is there a...
Was that preposterous?
Or a post-posterous going on somewhere?
Oh. I think...
Only things that Rupert Murdoch publishes in New York newspapers.
There's no post-posterous that I know of, and there's no anti-posterous or mid-posterous.
It's all very hard to say. So we think it's preposterous that there's a posterous or post-posterous. Okay.
Okay.
I'll go with that.
And we have another one here. Amy from Harrington Park, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi. My word is ravel. Because ravel and unravel mean the same thing.
Yes, they do.
And I always thought that was weird.
Yes. There are some words that mean the same thing both with and without the prefix. Ravel and unravel mean the same thing. Also, meliorate and ameliorate mean the same thing. You'd think it would be the opposite.
But the part isn't a negative, right?
No. No.
Which, yeah. So.
But...
Or at least that it
doesn't. That is interesting, although I don't know where the composer comes in all of that.
The composer?
R-A-V-E-L?
Oh.
I'm sorry. Well, when I was in college, I sat at a table with a bunch of other students who were talking about their music class, and they said, I really like that ravel. So.
Oh, well. They weren't English majors, though.
No.
They were music majors.
Obviously not. But there's another case, and here's another one. Boy. Oh, no, here's Leslie from the Bronx.
Yes.
You have an explanation of the word nonchalant?
Well, I was working with my French dictionary when you were talking about this, and I looked it up, and there's a French word, nonchalamment, which means nonchalantly, listless, lackadaisical, but it doesn't say whether or not the French word is used because of coming from English or if the English word is derived from the French word.
Well, there was a French root, chalant, and it may be archaic by now. It may not be in modern French anymore.
Well, I looked up that word first, and that has to do with warmth.
That's
I went there first, and then I went to nonchalantly on the English part of the French dictionary, and it referred me to nonchalamment, so I looked that up on the French side. And it's indifferent, lackadaisical, listless.
So to be chalant is to be warmed up about something.
Chalant.
Yeah, and to be nonchalant is to be cool towards it. I guess if you want to translate it literally.
Right.
Well, because French has given us so many words, there are sometimes confusions. I just saw a documentary with the great French director Jean Renoir. And he talked about his film, Rules of the Game, being controversial when at first he was speaking in French.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but he pointed out that he was using it in the English sense.
Ah.
Which I thought was very interesting. Because I don't know what it would mean in France or whether there is even such a word controversial. But he wanted to make that distinction.
Yeah.
Patrick in Harlem points out that inert is another one of these words.
Inert, exactly. I never thought of inert. These listeners are terrific. I'm adding so many to my list.
There was Okay. Well, I'm trying to sneak one or two more callers in. There is a caller who has an explanation about, you know, these people come and go. So somebody had an explanation on trembler. Oh, Eugene in Queens. He says trembler is a Spanish word, literally trembling, and it comes from the Latin tremular. Mm-hmm. Trembler, seism is a small earthquake, whereas terremoto, moving earth, is a big earthquake.
Yes,
so
that, but it's
so then,
not
so they're making, a distinction between the small earthquake as opposed to the big earthquake.
But it's temblor in English. That's why it sounds so weird. If it were tremblor.
Well, he says temblor.
Yeah, okay.
It's a Spanish word.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, but our listeners are so smart.
I think temblor is bizarre.
Catherine, Massapequa, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Of course, if you missed lunch and you were English, you'd be peckish right now, right?
That's true.
But I'm calling about redact. It may fit into the topic, but it also has confused me, because when I learned about redacting, it was in literary sources of the Bible, and the Bible was knitted together by many scholars like the Talmud that would take bits and pieces from different places, and then they decided by council what was going to be in it. So mm-hmm. redacting, I thought, meant a special kind of editing where you're knitting together from different sources, but now everyone uses it just to mean editing, and I think they sound fancy by using redact instead of edit.
Yeah, I see that actually there are three definitions in American Heritage for redact. One is to draw up or frame, as in a proclamation. Two is to make ready for publication by revising or editing.
So,
or remove.
So those are acceptable uses.
Yes.
A listener, Rebecca in Greenpoint, says the opposite of inept is adept.
Adept, of course.
So
there you go.
That does
so
work,
there's
but there's
no
still
ept.
No ept.
Yeah, it always has to be affixed.
And Gladys prefixed. Points out that temblor is very commonly used in England. Maybe that's where we picked it up from.
But they don't have earthquakes in England, do they? I never
they
hear
They talk
of them.
About earthquakes. England had an empire that was filled with earthquakes.
Oh, well. But I never, you know, I don't associate them with Britain somehow.
Dan from, where are you from? Washington Heights. Hi, Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I don't have a word. I have a question that I've been trying to ask over time.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this phrase before, but I think it's important to clear it up. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay. The phrase is reason is because. Now, I used that phrase way, way back in freshman English, and I got discombobulated by my by my instructor.
Who called you inept?
Yes.
Because of temblor.
My question is it, you know, way back in the early 60s, it wasn't proper to use the phrase, the reason is because. Because
is it proper now, Pat?
You know, it's so common in ordinary usage that I'm not going to call it incorrect. It is a bit redundant.
You could just say the reason is
the
that.
The reason is, or it's because.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, you don't need to say the reason why is this. Mm-hmm. Just the reason is this. So.
But we're working it through, and that's why we use those words.
Right, right. And if that's a crime, it's a small one.
Uh-huh.
So I wouldn't.
But I've had that problem. People have corrected me.
Yeah.
And I know it's the reason is because you.
Yeah, you have to imagine the ellipses there.
Yes.
The reason is, and here it comes. It's because, etc.
Now, Pat, we can't get to any more of the calls, but people write to you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about that?
Right. I answer questions. My husband and I have a blog called Grammarphobia. And we answer questions by email personally, and of those, we select one every day that we put on the blog.
Grammarphobia.com.
Right.
You can also email Pat at mailbox@grammarphobia.com. And if none of those things are acceptable and you're patient, you can always wait until Pat visits us once again on this show. It's going to be next month on May 9th.
Yes.
And you could also read one of her books. So there are lots of different options. Thank you so much for being with us again, Pat.
My pleasure.